Slicer Tangents is brought to you by Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the did we just hit a million order stage and everywhere in between. Sari and Hank, can you name anything that works so well? It's practically magic.
Dragonflies.
Toilets.
What? Yeah, okay. Well, here's one off the top of my head. How about selling with Shopify? Ooh. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and it helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Ooh. Not to mention, it's got award-winning customer support there to help you on your path to success. And those are just a few reasons to love Shopify. But Hank, what does your company, DFTBA, like so much about Shopify?
We've been using Shopify, I think, for over 10 years now, and it really has scaled extremely effectively with us. It is both a huge amount of information at your fingertips, but also in a way that makes it fairly easy to make the decisions you need to make, learn the things you need to learn, and do the things you need to do. It's all in there. And it's one of the great joys of my life is going into the Shopify backend and being like, look at all these people who wanted a thing that I had.
What a rich life you lead indeed.
And if you want to experience great joys like that too, I've got a magic trick for you. Poof. You can now try Shopify for a month for only $1. That's right. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tangents, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/tangents now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in, and experience the little joys of looking at the back end of a store. shopify.com/tangents, all lowercase. Abracadabra.
Welcome to SciShow Tangents. It's the lightly competitive science knowledge showcase. I'm your host, Hank Green, and joining me as always this week is science expert Sari Riley.
Hello.
And our resident everyman, Sam Schultz.
Hello.
I would like to give you both a suggestion.
Oh,
and that
no.
is to renew your driver's license before it expires.
Oh.
That's a great suggestion. I don't want to be without a driver's license.
Yeah, it's somewhat that, and it is also that apparently the company that handles your international business compliance regulations will notice that your driver's license is expired, and then they will need you to send them your social security card, which you do not have.
You don't have your social security card?
I thought I did. When was the last time I looked at it, though? 10 years ago? So I went to the folder that has it in there, and there's Catherine's.
I lost mine in the dorms of the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, which
not
seems
surprising.
Really bad, but it's in there somewhere.
Yeah, artists are notorious identity thieves.
It could be someone doing nice things with my identity, perhaps.
Yeah, it's just like getting real weird.
Yeah.
What's the weirdest identity theft that you could do? You just get a call one day from NASA and they're like, so we've accepted your application.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
You're going to space.
Yeah. I mean, paying off all your loans.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
That's not weird. That's just nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or like,
it's pretty
there's
weird.
Not really a lot you can do with just your social security number, is there? I don't know.
I think that they're more careful about it now than they used to be because all information is available to anyone everywhere.
Everybody was getting signed up to be astronauts, so they had to crack down.
It was a real problem.
Well, that's too bad, Hank. My brother and my dad went on a trip, and my brother didn't renew his driver's license, and he was getting on a plane or something, and they were like, hey, your driver's license is expired. You're in trouble. And my dad got really mad at him and started yelling at him, and then he handed him his driver's license, and they said, your driver's license is also expired. You are also in trouble.
Is your driver's license expired? Do you learn from
that
story?
It probably is very close to expired. Mm. Is it every 7 years?
In Montana, it's like 10, I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. I'd had mine for so long, I forgot that they expired. Oh,
it's
my God.
It's just long enough
been
that
forever.
You're like, I don't have to ever worry about this.
Yeah.
I haven't had to worry because I've never lived in one place that long. Like every 5 years or so, up and move again.
Well, or you could be like me and you move and you just don't update your driver's
license. That's what I also do.
Yeah. I found my passport card, so at least I can go to VidCon.
That's good. You could drive there. Oh, you can't because your driver's license is expired.
Right, I absolutely cannot. I need to get an Uber.
Yeah.
It'd be very expensive. Every week here on SciShow Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts while trying to stay on topic. Our panelists are playing for glory and for Hank Bucks, which I'll be awarding as we play. At the end of the episode, one of them will be crowned the winner. For the whole month of July, we will be celebrating the childlike wonder present in science with a bunch of topics inspired by the sort of things that kids love, like dinosaurs and spaceships, things like that. Now, we're calling it Kids Month, but that does not mean that you shouldn't enjoy tangents with your kids necessarily, as we still will swear, maybe sometimes, and also definitely talk about horrible things. But something you can enjoy with your kids is our sister show, SciShow Kids, on YouTube. It's like SciShow, but for early elementary kids. It's hosted by the lovely Jessie Knudsen-Castanet, who you may know from her channel Animal Wonders, and Anthony Brown, and also Squeaks the Robot Rat. Now, as always, we're going to introduce this week's kidsy topic with the traditional science poem, this week from Sam.
The world can be a scary place for everyone, both man and beast. There's hate and war and violence, or you might just end up someone's feast. And it's easy to fixate on the bad, and important too in many cases, but it doesn't hurt to seek the joy that's evident in many places. Like countless YouTube videos of a kitten pouncing on a kid, or a raven sledding down a hill on a discarded yogurt lid, or dolphins leaping from the sea for no particularly important reason, or a dog bounding through piles of leaves on a bright chilly day in the autumn season. So fear and pain and hunger are felt by all creatures every day. But it's important, I think, to keep in mind another thing we all do is play.
Play is the topic of the day's episode. Thank you, Sam, for your lovely poem and for reminding us that despite the fact that every day I do experience all of those negative emotions.
We're all very sad.
Maybe some days I might miss one of them, but I should also...
Hunger is pretty much always going to be there, yeah, unless you ate really a lot of food the day before.
Sometimes I don't have hunger because I just eat all the time. Oh, okay. Not a great way to do it. But I get to play quite a bit because of how I have a 5-year-old and he forces it on everybody, which is great. I'm glad he does. Sari, what is play?
This one you really gave me a hard. We're starting off Kids Month with one of the hardest definitions on tangents thus far.
Do you want me to tell you what play is?
Well, I have sources. I have literature. But yeah, what's play?
What's play?
You know it when you see it. What's... You and Sam should both define it.
It's like I got nothing.
Well, you looked so confident.
Yeah.
What is wrong with
you? Do you know what play when you see, you say, okay, you play with Oren. What does that look like? What's that play?
Well, there is, it's happy. It does not have a purpose. And we laugh, I guess. You don't have to laugh, though, I guess, for it to be play. I like the idea that you can play an instrument. Like that's the verb for using an instrument is to play, despite the fact that oftentimes it can be quite serious, but other times it can definitely be quite fun.
Don't you think some people would say like play is really just training you to do like your, what's it called when you're hand-eye coordination or like to do things when you grow up,
right?
Like combat.
Yeah. Right. Like the lions play so that they can later kill.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, maybe that's why we have the instinct, but that's not what we experience when we perform the instinct.
So that's like, I think that's the foundational knowledge upon which a lot of theories of play were built in the past few decades. They were like, we got to connect play to some sort of survival instinct. But now we're finding more and more animals that aren't better at the things that the play is supposed to help them be better at. So like
they don't get better.
Mice that play fight aren't
the
better
best
at protecting themselves. Or
they don't become warriors.
Yeah. Or otters that play with rocks and just kind of like toss them around aren't faster or better at cracking open shellfish. And so these constructs that we've created, all these hypotheses that we've made that like, okay, play is just a training state. Like that's why it's evolutionarily in our brains to do is slowly being deconstructed, and more people are trying to explain why these spontaneous fun behaviors exist. And now we've moved on to like the mental health level of it, of like play just helps you adapt to different scenarios and be resilient when things surprise you and like reduce stress. And that is because of a lot of play in like social development, like stages of play as children, and like the way that adults and children play, or that children play by themselves or with other kids. You can't do an unethical experiment where you're like, you're not allowed to play, child. Yeah. But you can look at different kinds, ways that kids play and how they grow up and kind of guess conclusions. But I feel like this is one of the things where if they discover this episode in 100 years, they'll be like, they were so wrong.
You fools.
Yeah, you idiots.
I hope so.
Sari, I bet the word play doesn't have a very clear etymology.
No, it doesn't. But it comes from a lot of like physical aspects. So I think in the way that play is most immediately associated with like play a sport or like play tussle or, I don't know, throw a stick around. That was the first definition of, you know, the very
the
fun
first game
of
throw a stick.
Stick throw is to like occupy oneself. So there's the Proto-West Germanic plagogenon, which means to occupy oneself. And then plagen in Old English meant to move lightly and quickly, amuse oneself, engage in active exercise. So play was very much a thing that you did. You did a brisk activity and then you were playing, probably because a lot of kids ran around. And so it became like quick motion or exercise. But then as the word evolved, then play ended up being something to describe time, something that you can stop and start. And that's where like playing a role and playing an instrument and like playing a part all came from, where play as a word started being used in broader and broader contexts. And like in this episode, we're talking about play as like the fun thing because it's an episode about kids. But like as a verb, that's how it ended up in so many different contexts, where we're just like, ah, you move your body and you do a thing. So that's playing.
You're playing.
That's
sure.
playing.
Okay. And that means it's time to move on to the quiz portion of our show. This week, we're playing a little game called The Scientific Definition. So playing is fun. The only way to make it more fun is to spend a significant amount of your life studying, documenting, and describing how we play. In the process, scientists have come up with a very impressive set of words and phrases to define different kinds of play. So for today, we're going to be playing the play edition of The Scientific Definition. I'm going to give you a word, and you're going to have to try to define it. And whoever comes closest to the actual definition is going to get a point.
Okay.
Do you understand?
Yes.
Yes.
I do.
Okay. Word number one.
We're playing right now.
We are.
Wow. Well, no, I'm too stressed to play. I'm not happy to free.
I'm worried about a lot of things.
Yeah. But I'll try to have
fun. People watching, I might lose. It might look silly. The first word is thanatosis.
Ooh. Thanatos is a character on Gargoyles, but also from the play A Midsummer Night's Dream, I think.
Is he? I don't know.
I believe so.
Sam, you're so educated. You're so
well,
artsy.
I learned about the Gargoyles character before I learned about the Shakespeare character. So I took the back way. So I'm going to guess it has something to do with acting. What did he do? You guess for a minute. Let me think about what Thanatos did in that play.
Okay. Thanatos to me, and I don't know where this is coming from because it's not in the Persona video games, it's Tartarus, but I feel like Thanatos is like death. Somewhere in my brain, the clouds of thought are overlapping where I'm like, it's like a death thing.
It's a death thing.
Okay. It's a morbidity thing. And so I'm going to guess that Thanatosis is like when a possum plays dead or when a snake plays dead to like,
oh shit,
I'm dead, don't pay any attention to me. X is for eyes.
Now I'm really doubting myself. That sounds really good, but I'll just guess something different than what you said anyway, because I think you're right. I'll go along with my original train of thought. It's maybe like pretending to be a thing that you're not, like something pretending to be a snake that isn't a snake.
Oh, and that is that a is that something that the gargoyle Thanatos did?
No, I think in the first of all, I'm really doubting that there's a Thanatos in either Midsummer's Night's Dream or Gargoyles at this point. I think it's Xanatos, and I think he's a different guy. So I was just going off of how they turned a guy into a dog.
It is Xanatos. I remember Xanatos.
He was like the main bad guy, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he's like, he's Will Riker.
Yes, he's Will Riker. And he likes to cosplay as a gargoyle.
Yeah. Is there a Xanatos in Shakespeare as well?
I think there's a Thanatos somewhere, but I think you're right about it being death. Mm. Anyway, Hank, humiliate me now, please.
Sari is 100% correct.
Damn it. I knew it.
That's exactly what it is. It's playing dead. It's done by a variety of organisms, mostly to avoid getting eaten. Though sometimes it is done to avoid getting eaten by your mate, male nursery web spiders will present an insect to a female. And if she accepts, they will mate. If she doesn't, he immediately is like, I'm not, don't worry about me. Just, you didn't like my insect? Not only the shame I feel is so deep. I've died. Don't worry about me anymore.
Because otherwise she will eat him? Is that why?
I think yes. Because of sexual cannibalism.
What an extra horrible wrinkle that some animals have to deal with in that.
Yeah, really? I'm so glad we don't have that. Yeah. The eastern hognose snake turns its belly up and lets its tongue hang out of its mouth and releases a bad-smelling liquid from some glands it has.
Ooh.
So it's not like I don't just look dead.
I smell.
I'm rotting. Like, uh-huh. You don't want anything to do with this. So Thanatosis is a pretty common thing in the animal kingdom. It's interesting evidence of how animals have a concept of death, maybe, both for the animal playing dead and for the possible predators avoiding them. Mm. So, like, they know that that's something that's not alive or different from alive in some way.
And that's not a fun play either. That's like, I'm in mortal danger.
Yeah.
I'm going to excrete my glands and pretend to be dead play.
Yeah. So possums definitely also do this. That's not a myth or anything. Possums totally play dead. Now, on to continue the theme of gargoyles, our second word is gargalesis.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah. Can anybody give me the scientific definition of gargalesis?
Well, pretending to be a rock. How about that?
That's gargoyles do that.
Yeah.
Gargalesis? Gargling makes me think of like gargling fluid rather than gargoyle. I feel like the gargoyle's to throw us off or to throw me off specifically. I'm going to say it's like when you're a kid or when you're an aquatic animal and you suck water into your mouth and you spray other people with it. Or you
when
like blow a raspberry.
Or an aquatic animal.
Yeah. when you don't think about how gross it is, when you have no reason to think it's gross, but you like suck water in your mouth and you spit it out at someone or you like blow a raspberry. So like any sort of like spit play is that.
Yeah, spit play.
That's very a normal way to phrase it.
It just really hit me how much public pool water I've had in my mouth in my life, and that was not a good idea ever.
It's wild to watch my son in the bath just put bath water in his mouth,
and that's I'm like, just your own water.
Stop! And he's like, I can't, Dad.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's instinctual. It's part of this evolutionary urge, and so now you can call it Orin. Stop gargalizing.
Well, you're both wrong, but Sari's definitely closer to the truth.
Okay.
It is a heavy, laughter-inducing tickling.
Oh.
So there's two kinds of tickling that were defined by G. Stanley Hall and Arthur Allen in 1897.
Okay.
They wrote papers including the psychology of tickling, laughing, and the comic. And the other kind of tickling is called kinesmesis. And that's more of the like light tickling that's more irritating than like laughter inducing, which you can do to yourself. You can like do this and be like, I don't want to stop touching me that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas you kind of can't. Most people can't, though apparently people with schizophrenia can tickle themselves sometimes, and we don't know why. But the kind where you get tickled or tickle someone else, and there's lots of like big giggles. That's called gargalesis, apparently, according to these
two guys.
Decided they would call it that.
Who I bet were really fun guys.
I mean, they were into it.
They were tickling a bunch of people.
Kinesmesis is found across many mammals, but gargalesis is very rare, and it may be that chimpanzees and other primates may experience it. Some research think that young rats emit like a high-frequency vocalization when fingers move across their back, though it's not clear if this is related to gargalesis. So it's a weirdly specific to humans thing. It's not that much that we do that other animals don't do.
Chins and gargalesis.
Yeah. And the internet. Those three things.
That's it.
Also, the television program Gargoyles. The last word is two words. It's a term, I guess you would call it. It is Shannon's number. What is Shannon's number?
Shannon's number.
I did not know what this was. I'll tell you that.
Interesting. Okay. My first thought is like a 7 degrees from Kevin Bacon, like your Bacon number or something. Yeah. But I don't know how that applies to play. Like
that's a game, isn't it? Kind of. I don't know. I can't get into Hank's head and see what counts as a game or not a game. Mm. To him, the whole world could be a game. Like the Joker. He's got a Joker mindset, you know?
I'm just pulling the strings over here.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
I feel like
I'm actually Elon Musk the whole time.
You've been causing all this chaos on Twitter. Yeah. Your fault.
Yeah. You thought that was a real guy?
He's just another book character.
I'm feeling sports for some reason. I think it's like a spread of some sort of like it's baseball. I'm gonna say it's baseball.
It's a baseball spread.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whatever that means is what it is.
It's definitely a game. There you have that. So you both are very nonspecific, but I'm just gonna cut you off. So we've got something to do with some kind of relation to other people through a person named Shannon, and we've got something to do with a baseball. It's to do with a baseball, which baseball the game does have to do with baseball the ball. And that one's going to go to Sam because it is an actual game and it is a number about a game. That is a game that people play. But the game is chess.
Very different.
Very different, but closer than I think the Kevin Bacon game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it is the number of possible moves in a chess game. So how many different ways a chess game could go. Mm-hmm. And it was based on the work of an American mathematician, Claude Shannon, who wrote a 1950 paper, basically making the argument that you cannot create a computer program that could beat a person at chess because there's no way that you could, like, the computer program could predict the total number of potential moves in a chess game, and so calculated that number, which is 10 to the 120th power, which is going to seem like, that might be big, that might be small. It's very big. The number of atoms in the universe is 10 to the 80th.
Oh, so dear.
It's much, much bigger than that. And
I was going to say, it seemed like a pretty small number to me.
It's a big number. It's one with 120 zeros behind it. Hmm. And that's going to be a tricky one for a computer to figure out. But artificial intelligence solved that problem. And Shannon, it turns out, was wrong. There are, in the game of Go, 10 to the 170 possible moves. So that's even another, like, way, way beyond chess.
Where are computers at with that one?
Totally better than people.
Yeah.
One, not computers, but one particular computer.
Sorry, program. Shannon.
Sorry, Shannon. Well, I guess you're going to have to live with that. Probably not, because you're probably dead by now.
Roll over in your grave, Shannon. You were wrong about math.
I hope that none of his, like, loved ones are listening. Well, good work, everybody. Sari got two of those, and Sam got one. Next, we're going to take a short break. Then we'll be back for the Fact Off.
SciShow Tangents is brought to you by Rocket Money, a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. money is annoying. You have to remember so much stuff, like your bank account password and your PIN number. You got to balance your checkbook. And I don't even know what that means, to balance your checkbook. You got to put all your receipts in a folder or something, probably, too. And who has time for all that? Not me, the old money dummy himself. But if you don't manage your finances, there can be dire consequences. Like maybe, for instance, you pay your utility bill twice, huh?
You know, we all make mistakes. We all move sometimes. My partner and I moved recently. I didn't think to check the old utility accounts, but then I was doing my taxes and going through all the utility bills. And we logged into our old account and I was like, what the heck? There's a couple $100 bill here for an apartment that we don't live in anymore. Mm. What's going on here?
The electric company's just like, thank you very much.
Yeah. And I was just too busy and too tired to figure out that out until mid-February, when I was like, oh, shoot. But boy, would it have been easier if we had an app that said, you're paying your utility bill twice.
The unfortunate truth of the matter is, it's important to keep on top of your finances. But the fortunate truth is that Rocket Money exists. Rocket Money gives you a clear view of your expenses, letting you see your spending in one place at a glance. Rocket Money gives you the power to easily track your monthly spending, create custom budgets, and even find and cancel unwanted subscription services, and also potentially utility bills for old apartments you don't live in anymore. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when you use all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use, like subscription services, and stop paying your power bill twice, like I almost did, thankfully didn't. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions and manage your finances the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/tangents. That's rocketmoney.com/tangents. rocketmoney.com/TANGENTS.
Welcome back, everybody. Get ready for the Fact Off. Panelists have brought science facts to present to me in an attempt to blow my mind. And after they have presented their facts, I will judge those facts and award Hank Bucks to the one that I think will make the best TikTok. But to decide who goes first, I have a trivia question. Let me read it to you. We just talked about the Shannon number. Claude Shannon assumed that a typical chess game, to get that number, he assumed that it would be about 40 moves. So that's the average number of moves in a chess game, being conservative. But games can go longer than that, much longer. How long was the longest game of professional chess?
Question of clarification.
Yes, sir.
This says 40 moves per player. Are we guessing per player or total games?
40 moves. You are right. Moves. Per okay. player.
I feel like you could be 40 moves per player feels low to me.
That feels high to me. I get beat way faster than that, I think.
Oh, yes. I just, okay. Maybe I play
against really
equally
good at chess.
No, I'm horrible at chess. I think I've only played against my dad, and we're both bad.
The longest game of chess was 500 moves per player.
Ooh.
So 1,000 total moves.
I was going to guess, okay, you have now changed my expectations once more.
I didn't know. I don't know anything.
I'm going to guess 150 moves per person.
I think that, who wins that? Sari wins.
Wow.
It's 269 moves, I think, per player, though it doesn't say in the show notes. So either way, Sari wins. The game was played in Belgrade in 1989, and it was played by two Serbian players. The total game lasted 20 hours and 15 minutes, and it ended in a draw.
They fell asleep. They must have. Like, I'm so done now. I don't even want to play against you anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like, they kind of must have just been chasing each other around the board.
Mm-hmm.
What do you even do?
Yeah, you're not good enough to, like, trap your other person
in
some
the
clever
two
way.
Worst chess players in the whole world.
We're really good at the beginning part of the game.
Uh-huh. And then everyone's got queens, and so you're just, like, moving and moving.
Yeah, yeah. Sari, that means you get to go first, or if you want to.
Sure, I'll go first. So howler monkeys are known for their distinct fur colors, loud, raspy roars, and for being pretty lackadaisical, resting for about half the time they are awake. They live in trees, mostly in South America, and are herbivores that eat the leaves around them. And primates aren't the best at digesting leaves, even with specialized digestive enzymes. So it's been commonly assumed that howler monkeys' not-so-nutritious diet means they don't have an abundance of energy, which is tied to their lazy behavior. Sometimes, though, they spend some of that energy playing with each other, doing classic cartoon monkey things like hanging from their tails or making funny faces. And a big question in any kind of play research is, why would you waste your precious leaf energy doing all that? Mm-hmm. A paper published in April 2022 in the journal Animal Behavior attempted to find some answers by studying seven groups of two subspecies of howler monkeys. There were some hinted at developmental reasons where adult monkeys would play with juveniles, especially in big groups, but the most unusual thing these researchers found was that adult howler monkeys would play with other adults most often when they were going on a special foraging trip for fruit. And fruits are a fairly rare and high-value food in the treetops because they're full of sugar and easily digestible. And howler monkeys, surprisingly, don't really fight over it. Even for a social animal, that's a little weird, given that they don't have a social hierarchy like some other primates for who gets to eat the fruit, and they don't use more well-studied kinds of primate social bonding, like grooming each other to like get close and share, maybe because they're too busy napping to groom each other. I don't know. That wasn't in the paper. That was my speculation. So instead, these researchers supposed that play, like making silly faces at each other, helps diffuse tension when one monkey finds a really good fruit. Kind of like someone cracking a joke to break the tension at an awkward dinner. Howler monkey adults could just play around to keep each other from getting stressed out or getting too grumpy at each other, fighting over a delicious fruit prize. So play is still incredibly mysterious and nuanced, but this is another grain of evidence that it might have to do with just coping with the world and what it throws at you. And I guess the lesson is that when you're feeling a little grumpy because you didn't get a yummy fruit, just do a little goof and it might help.
Yeah. So who gets to eat it? Just whoever found it?
The person I think
found
so. It. I don't
He's
know.
Like,
yeah.
I'm eating this, but yeah. Don't worry.
But I'm
going to
make
it.
A silly face and so you won't be mad at me.
Okay.
Yeah. Just does this work on people? So if I'm having a disagreement with my wife, can I just make a little goofy face?
Or if you find a buried treasure and you're
if
like...
If I find a buried... Whoops. What do people want? Probably buried treasure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you find a buried treasure and you're like competing with your arch rival, obviously John, to get to the buried treasure, you both arrive there. You arrive there first. You're hoisting the chest above your head.
Yeah.
Make a
Which
fart
I definitely
sound.
Can't do, by the way.
Okay. You're hoisting
Unless it's
the
like
chest.
a really crappy treasure. Yeah. Just nothing good in there. It's a blanket! Pillows, too!
You've picked up one gold doubloon, and you're flipping it in the air luxuriously.
Which is
Yeah, which is plenty. You should make a fart joke, and then maybe he'll be like, "Ah, man,
I can't you deserve stay mad
that.
At you.
I can't stay mad at you.
That's the monkey's whole ethos in life. I can't stay mad at you.
Yeah.
I like that.
Sam, what do you got?
Of all mankind's inventions, video games are surely one of the finest. They're just a joy to play. But what about animals? Don't you think that bird eating bugs outside your window or the cat sleeping at your feet would rather be performing triple jumps and butt stomps with our friend Super Mario? Well, some scientists thought that, and they did something about it, too. Scientists at Purdue University's Center for Animal Welfare Science released a paper last year, which was the result of studies of pigs playing video games going back to the early 1990s. And these pigs got pretty good at video games for animals with no hands. So the team set up a computer and a heavy-duty joystick in a pig pen and trained four pigs, Hamlet, Omelet, Ebony, and Ivory, to approach the machine and manipulate a joystick with their mouths and snouts to play a game, which was originally designed for chimpanzee research. And the goal of the game was to guide a dot into a little goal area, and the goal would like move between rounds once you got it in there. Mm-hmm. When they'd hit the goal, a dispenser would give them some dog food, which, okay, maybe that's not so much playing exactly, but isn't the serotonin that humans get from playing video games sort of like microscopic dog food for the brain? Plus, the research pointed out that there were times when the dispenser would malfunction and not not give any food, but the pigs still kept playing the game anyway. So after about 4 months, the pigs were, first of all, super excited to wake up every day and go play the game. They would like wait by the gate and like be really happy. But they were also performing above how they would have performed if they were just making random movements. So that showed that pigs had the motor skills and the ability to recognize that what they were doing by moving the stick was affecting the thing on screen. The best pig player was hitting the goal 76% of the time, though overall they weren't as good at gaming as monkeys from another study, but they were much better than this dog that I found footage of who was trying to play a game. And they had tried to teach the dog the game for a whole year, and the dog still could not figure out how to play the game. So,
was it the same game? The dot game?
It was the same game, yeah.
Okay.
And the dog was just like, he looked so sad. He was just like, I know that I don't know how to do this.
Yeah. I'll lick your face. Lick your face?
But you may be asking, why are they doing this? Researchers were interested in animal welfare because they were from the Purdue University.
That was in the name.
This is right in there in the name. So they were using games to test the pig's intelligence and self-agency, which in turn would help us figure out how we should be treating pigs and how to make them more comfortable. Related studies showed that pigs could also use climate control devices and lights installed in their pens. In one weird conclusion of the study, the researchers suggested that they would look into if animals could learn how to use touch screens to communicate. Which, if animals are using touchscreens, I feel like that is one of the points at which we should say, we can't eat this animal anymore.
Yeah.
So in conclusion, we may be approaching a future in which when you get killed in Fortnite, you might hear oinking coming from the other player instead of a 12-year-old with a potty mouth.
The fact that came to my mind when you were talking about this was that in the first Air Force One, which was Richard Nixon's Air Force One, mm-hmm. I think, I don't know, I'm not for sure that this is...
You're not a president guy, you're a science guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That he always complained about it being the wrong temperature, and so he would say, can you turn the heat up or can you turn the cool on? And eventually they installed a thermostat so that he could control it himself, except it didn't do anything. and so
what a rude fact about Richard Nixon in this context.
Yeah. Well, it made me think, like, if the pigs can control their own climate, they're like, I can't eat them because they are as advanced as Richard Nixon.
I thought you were implying that just give them a little thermostat. Don't let them control the temperature. They'll just go over to it.
They're like, God dang it. I turned it all the way down. I'm still quite warm.
Yeah.
Oink, oink.
Oink, oink.
Yeah. We got to get these boys a touchscreen so that we can move on.
We have to, I think. It was disturbing. I was watching. There's videos of these pigs. And they're like having a hell of a time playing this little arcade game.
So Sarah came into that with a 1-point lead. And I think that Sam made it back. Because I want to tell TikTok about these pigs.
There's videos too. It's cute.
I can film the video with my camera. That's how they like it on TikTok. They're like, don't import footage. That's work.
That's how
just
they
film
like
your
it
screen.
On TikTok. Oh,
yeah.
That's so weird.
Those monsters.
What are you guys doing over there?
It doesn't seem authentic if you like edit it. That's how it works. Well, congratulations, Sam.
Thank you.
I think that we should all be eating less pigs. So including me. We're gonna make that case for the world. All right, and that means it's time to ask the science couch, where we've got ask a listener question to our virtual couch of finely honed scientific minds. This question is from Drungus Prophet on Discord. Apparently. What is the most complicated game and why is it Magic the Gathering? We just talked about the Shannon number of Go and how it's, so you could sort of count it as like the Shannon number, which is how, like as an actual sort of objective metric of complexity, there's one to the 170th potential moves. That's pretty complicated. But is there another way to think about this?
Yeah, I think that is how a lot of mathematicians think about complexity. So in mathematics and computer science, to my understanding, so this is not my field, I'm going to do my best, complexity is how difficult is it to look at a game board and see how many potential moves are left and from, and also like potentially guess a winner, like go to a win state. And so when you're studying the complexity of a game like Magic, you have to take into account like the deck order, the number of different cards you can pick from to put in those decks, and like the ways that games can play and decisions can be made if a computer were to play Magic, and like how many
outcomes.
Because
it's not just the card you play, it's how you use the card and how also cards can be interacted and affected by other cards, which might get, you know, you get some exponentiality going on there.
Yep. Yeah. And like what happens when you discard a card, or what happens when like a card has you draw two more. Like there are so many effects interwoven in a game like Magic, and they just have created so many freaking cards.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely closer to the most complicated game if you can play with illegal decks.
Yeah.
which increases the number of playable cards by a lot.
Yeah. So that's their definition. That's the mathematical definition of complexity, is like, can you plug it into a computer and brute force your way to a win condition by like playing through those qualities? So that's the complexity as far as like mathematics and computer science. And based on that definition of complexity, a couple of nerds did the math and were like, how complex is Magic?
Oh, with Magic specifically.
With Magic specifically, yes. And so it's published on Archive, which is like the public domain.
Open
source.
Yeah,
not necessarily peer reviewed, just submitted, but still quite rigorous. And they determined that Magic the Gathering, it is impossible to just brute force your way to predict who's going to win a game of Magic by looking at a deck of cards and the layout. There are too many decisions to make, which is different than, can you train an AI to play Magic, which you can.
Sure.
Because that's based on probability rather than, like, at some point you like hit a threshold where there's a better decision or a worse decision. And it's different from like how long the rule book is. And the way that they defined this was in the context of Turing machines. And this is where my computer science knowledge gets a little wibbly, but I'll try my best. And Sam, call me out if something's too confusing.
Rude. I thought you were going to be like, if I get something wrong about it.
Oh, yeah. If I get something wrong about it.
And
Turing,
I was
going
to say, I don't know shit about that.
So. Turing machines, in my understanding of them, this is like old knowledge plus rapid Googling. It's not a real computer. It's like a theoretical computer. It is the simplest possible like thing that you could compute, where it's just one symbol after another after another. So a lot of visualizations, it's like a ticker tape of ones and zeros. And like hypothetically, through a long sequence, through an infinitely long sequence, this like strip of paper can do everything that your laptop or like the computer in front of you is calculating right now. Like you can brute force any calculation. And no one actually builds them because they're not useful to build. It is useful as a thought experiment for computer scientists and mathematicians because it says that if you have a long enough string of numbers and a long enough thing like referring to each other, then you can do computations. And so
And you can compare the length of the piece of paper for different situations.
Yeah. And so based on that definition, these computer scientists said that you could create a Turing machine out of Magic cards. Like you could line up a sequence of Magic cards that are mapped to something else. And then like there are enough functions within the cards where it's like, go look at this one. This one does 30 damage. This is that you can create a rudimentary computer to create calculations, like do calculations with Magic cards.
What I'm gathering from this, Sari, is that...
Yes, please translate Magic it into the word.
Magic the Gathering is complex. Whether it is the most complicated game, I don't think that they did this for other games, so we can't really say, but definitely is a complicated game. And we need these computer scientists to do this to Uno and chess and Settlers of Catan and tell me which one is the most complicated game. Or maybe, question asker, maybe it's your job.
Maybe Drungus Prophet on Discord needs to do these calculations.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to ask the Science Couch your question, you can follow us on Twitter at @SciShowTangents, where we'll tweet out topics for upcoming episodes every week. Or you can join the Tangents Patreon and ask us on Discord. Thank you to @TheBlackLight, @QuillenBean, and everybody else who asked us your questions for this episode. If you like this show and you want to help us out, we'd love it if you would do that. You can go to patreon.com/SciShowTangents, where you can become a patron and get access to things like our newsletter and our bonus episodes, and lots of other weird stuff. Just acres and acres of deep weirdness. Second, you can leave us a review wherever you listen. That helps us know what you like about the show, helps other people like know what you like about the show. And finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just tell people about us. Thank you for joining us. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
And I've been Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is created by all of us and produced by Sam Schultz. Our editor is Seth Glicksman. Our story editor is Alex Billow. Our social media organizer is Paolo Garcia Prieto. Our editorial assistants are Debuki Chakravarti and Emma Dowster. Our sound design is by Joseph Tuna Medish. Our executive producers are Caitlin Hoffmeister and me, Hank Green. And we couldn't make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted. One more thing! Unsurprisingly, there's not a rich historical record of poop-centric games, but at least in recent decades, people have held cow chip throwing competitions where contestants throw big dried discs of cow poop as far as possible. The Guinness World Record holder is Steve Erner, who threw a cow chip 266 feet, or 81.1 meters, on August 14th, 1981. If you're going for a Guinness World Record, I bet that's one that might not be too hard to take on.
No, don't take this away from Steve. You know that people are still buying him beers off of that, right?
Someone can do it. Someone who's listening to this podcast right now, I bet you're strong enough and have the technique to throw
get out in
a
that
disc
field,
of cow poop.
Find some cow poop and start throwing, guys. Come on. Mm-hmm.